Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, they canceled summer. The C&E is going to be closed. Like, they're closing everything, Bob.
Matt, I don't know why anybody's surprised. Based on all the information we've been given for literally months now, this was so predictable. And yet, it's still disappointing. And it's natural to want to blame. I'm not even sure I'm ready to blame anybody anymore. I think there's going to be time for that. But we sort of need to get past blame and just sort of band together and get through it now, I think. Just keep the receipts. Keep the receipts for everybody. There will be an audit later. But let's just get through this, because whether you agree with someone politically or not, it doesn't really even matter right now anymore. This is more about let's just get over this hump and then get back to hating each other.
Well, I got to tell you, Bob, we have got a full political podcast that I've got set up for us today. But don't worry. But it needs to be said. Did you hear Rob Ford's reason for canceling the golf courses?
I haven't, actually. I made a point to not listen, but I'm glad you brought up golf courses. Okay, shoot, buddy, and then we'll do some golf.
He came out and said, you know, basically, listen, I know golf is safe, but then, you know, you get together with your buddies and you all get in the same car. And then afterwards, my buddies, I know what they like to do. You like to have a couple pops after a round. I mean, first, I'm using the term pops, like, having beers. Wink, wink. Aren't I devilish?
Some adult beverages.
But his basic point was, 800 golf courses are going to be closed because my friends like to drink beer. It's ridiculous.
Well, I think,
and I don't golf. And Bob, it needs to also be said, I don't golf. This is just about them ignoring science, and there's a lot of job loss. Like, it just seems so stupid.
Remember when he campaigned, he had very few actual policies, but he did have buck a beer.
Oh my God, you're right.
So I'm not sure that this is a guy who's sitting there studying the governing statutes of the province and saying, where can we find multiple efficiencies? Mm-hmm. I think he's just got like something, you know, a plate of something, probably greasy, perched on his belly and a pop in his hand.
Yep. And
he's basically just scrolling through his messages to see if they're positive or negative. I think that's the extent of his planning.
I wouldn't go on Twitter if I was him. That's just my message for the premier. Avoid Twitter.
Well, he seems to be avoiding everything these days, so that shouldn't be a problem. I'm kind of amused. Like, the golf thing is really interesting to me because I think the golfers are right. And I think the golfers are right for the same reason that it's stupid that you can't go play, you know,
tennis.
Tennis. Exactly. Perfect example. And all of the health experts are saying, yes, we need to do various, sometimes even really painful things to get over this hump, but this isn't one of them. It's so bizarre. Like, we leave Amazon warehouses open, but we don't let people golf because somebody might have a drink afterwards. It's not a plan, Matt. It's not a plan. I think honestly, like, they just wake up every morning and just take it from there.
I wish I was there in the room when they, like, when they decided about this one. Like, the CDC, the most cautious bunch of nervous Nellies out there, they're like, no, be outside. You're fine. It doesn't transmit by being outside.
I'll take this one step further.
Yeah.
Being outside is actually going to help to keep people healthier, both mentally and physically. So the idea that you would limit people's opportunity to do that is not just mistaken. It's running in the opposite direction of a good idea. People don't
agree.
Like that. Yeah, look. I think it's pretty safe to say that Ford botched this.
Yes.
I think Trudeau made a lot of mistakes too. I don't understand Trudeau's mistakes nearly as well as I do Ford's. And that's partially because one is federal and the other is provincial. And the provincial stuff has a direct impact on my life. The federal people are basically like, cut the checks, procure the vaccine. And that hasn't gone particularly well either. But it's very macro. The micro is what we tend to feel in our lives. Can I go into my favorite store to get something? Can I meet my friend for a game of tennis? These are the things that I actually feel every day. And I think because of that, we have a tendency to be more critical of Ford than we would Trudeau. People will blame this on the mainstream media. I don't buy that for one second. I don't think the Sun franchise has been taking it particularly easy on Trudeau. I don't think the National Post takes it easy on him. The Globe leans that way. So basically what they mean is the Star and the CBC. And guess what? Everybody's got their media outlet that pisses them off. So conservatives haven't cornered the market on, you hate my guy and it's so unfair. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Everybody points to somebody. Like Joe Warmington isn't exactly pals with anybody in the progressive movement, you know?
Oh, no, absolutely. There is a split of the two. Sometimes it seems like the CBC, which is taxpayers' money, it leans a little bit left, but whatever. Everyone's got their place.
It's all taxpayer money. All these businesses are subsidized.
God, you're right. Not just the Oakland A's.
You know, we talk about CTV as a media outlet as though it were a private business. It's a hybrid private-public, just like everything of a certain size in this country. Because they got their hands out and they're taking, don't forget, Bell returned the money that it took, the $100 million in curb payments.
I wish they had kept it and given it to me.
Yeah, well, you know what? There's fewer people to spread it around. around the shop these days.
By the way, Bob, are you ready for my next hot political topic?
Yeah.
I love what Justin Trudeau did yesterday. I love it.
What did he do?
He trolled Leaf fans because Toronto's now playing Montreal. Trudeau is a Canadiens fan. And he said, he came out and said, I'm just amazed at how hope continues to spring eternal for Leaf fans. As a Hab fan, I'm kind of in admiration of Toronto fans who continue to cling to their hopes every year, year in and year out. It's impressive to see. And he finishes it by saying, if the unthinkable does happen and we're all wonderfully surprised to see the Leafs in the Stanley Cup final, I know there will be ways to make sure everyone gets to watch. He went, like, that might have been his most genuine moment as a politician. He whipped the Leafs. I love that because politicians are always about empty platitudes and trying to be careful. Trudeau was a sports fan for a moment. It was awesome.
You mean former boxer, Justin yes. Trudeau?
Former boxer, yes. Hey, listen, I mean, the way boxing is right now, Trudeau could fight one of the Jake Paul
Ball?
Brothers
see
in a second.
Jake
yeah, sure, why not?
That's so funny. Well, I think we found a way to resolve who's right, who's wrong. It goes back to the thing. You pick your champion, I pick my champion. Let's have them fight.
Yeah.
And the winner gets to set policy.
I really appreciated that because I wish more politicians, you're like, oh, I don't want to upset. Come out and just say which team you're a fan of. Like I wish all politicians did. It's genuine. It's real.
You know who's the best at being the opposite of what you're talking about? John Tory.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in favor of whatever sporting team happens to be playing right now in the 416-905. I'll go as far to bet the other mayor that I'll have to wear his jersey.
Bob, you fell into my trap.
Oh, beautiful.
You stupid son of a bitch.
Well, call me a glorious son of a bitch, at least.
You glorious son of a bitch. My opening thought today is on what I want to see done for the variety of Canadian cities if their team wins in the first round of the playoffs.
Are you willing to preview this? I guess actually this will be, you'll post this after you do the show. So, okay, let's do it.
Okay, so what I don't want is, oh, if Montreal wins, Toronto gives them craft beer. And then if Toronto wins, Montreal gives them 12 pounds of smoked meat from Schwartz's.
Schwartz's, like, right.
Yeah, it's always Schwartz's. Here's what I want. If the Leafs win, Montreal is not allowed to bring up the fact that the Leafs haven't won the Cup since 1967. They have to stop doing that. Does that seem like a fair bet?
Ooh, I like that. Okay, so how about in exchange, like if Toronto wins, no one in Montreal is allowed to use the numbers 1967 in that order?
Yes.
And in return, we send them a ton of weed.
I feel they're doing good with weed. I've got
yeah, probably right.
this is what my offer is. If Montreal wins, A, John Tory needs to resign. He's got to immediately step down and resign. We need real stakes here. But Montreal now gets an intensive vetting process, and they're allowed to turn back anyone from Toronto coming to Montreal for a stag or a stagette.
Ooh, if I like that.
If it's too much of a bro down, sorry, you got to head to Quebec City. If the bride-to-be's got too many novelty knickknacks on her sweater, then they get sent to Sherbrooke.
Hull used to be a really great off-ramp for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, how about if Toronto loses, we have to send them three of our best functional bridges?
Ooh, that's a good one. We just put up a new one down by Cherry Beach.
Some of these bridges in Montreal could use a little freshening. I haven't been there in a bunch of years now, but I used to go all the time. And you'd go under the underpasses and look up and think, is today that day? Oh, man. What food? What food could we send them that's really representative of Toronto? I'd want to send them some golden turtle.
Ooh, okay. So you're going
golden turtle vegan foe. That's my go-to. How about you, Matt? What would you send them?
There's nothing, because like when I think of my favorite restaurants, there's versions of those in Montreal. Because, Bob, I like the French restaurants, especially the ones with good wine lists. Montreal has plenty of those as well. I can't think of any food I could give Montreal.
Well, what food do we have that's really good here that they don't have in Montreal? They got a lot of good food in Montreal. Who's kidding who? It's not like Vancouver. Vancouver has good food, but only specifically. Like, I went looking for Greek food one time in Vancouver. It was hard. Like, here, honestly, like, if you shoot an arrow in the sky, it's going to land on somewhere serving souvlaki.
Yeah.
You know, there it was hard to do. Well, these are good points, Matt. I like this a lot. It's a creative thought.
I got a better one for you.
Go for it.
Winnipeg and Edmonton.
Ooh, okay.
If Winnipeg wins, Edmonton's got to take down the City of Champions from their slogans and all their signs.
Good.
Now, here's the devious one. If Edmonton wins, Winnipeg has to give up some of their most famous celebrities to Edmonton. Neil Young has to change the lyrics. It can no longer be Portage and Main 50 Below from the song from Prairie Town. He's got to change that to a major intersection in Edmonton.
Now, just to give you a heads up, that's the Guess Who.
Yeah, but it's a Neil. I know, but it's a Neil Young song.
Did Neil Young write that song?
I believe so. I was looking it up.
Okay, well, you looked it up. You've done the research.
Yeah,
you've earned the right.
Yeah, and Monty Hall, Anna Paquin, Burton Cummings—they're now all from Edmonton. They're no longer from Winnipeg.
Well, who are celebrities from Edmonton? Let's look this up right now. Who's famous from Edmonton?
Wayne Gretzky.
Not from Edmonton.
I'm aware of that. Yeah, no, I didn't look it up. I was sort of going on the City of Champions thing. I also think if the Leafs win the Stanley Cup, Trudeau must not only apologize to all Toronto residents for his slander, but I think everyone in Toronto gets 1 year without paying any taxes. Kind of like from the asteroid movie with Bruce Willis.
Nobody's from Edmonton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Katie Lang, but not really. She's from another part of Alberta, really. Ooh, Alfie Zappacosta.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Writers. Just flipping through here. W.P. Kinsella.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
Marshall McLuhan was from Edmonton. Was he, though? I don't think
you don't know
Edmonton.
Marshall McLuhan.
Oh, he was born in Edmonton.
Okay, so there's one, and then he could reprise his role, you know. You don't know a thing about my work.
Let's see here. Oh, Pierre Luters, famous Canadian bobsledder.
Can you be a bobsledder and famous?
I'm sure there will come a day. Oh, Brendan Gallagher from Edmonton. Yeah,
doesn't have the same feel as Burton Cummings.
Yeah, it really doesn't, does it?
Yeah.
Winnipeg punches above its weight. Winnipeg is the most fascinating city. I didn't like it at all for about the first four or five times I ever went. Mm-hmm. And then I spent, oddly enough, I fell in love with the city in February. I had to spend a week there in February, and it was so cold, Matt. It was so cold. Do you know how cold it was?
How cold?
It hit minus 44.
Jesus.
I was wearing two pairs of pants. Two pairs of pants, Matt.
Well, why were you liking it? That's horrible.
Because it was so bizarre. It was like being in another world. And I realized it gave me a certain freedom. I didn't have to do anything that wasn't connected to survival.
Oh, okay. So you didn't have to worry about your hair. Like, any of the superficial things were gone. It was.
Yes. It was like being just a different human being emancipated from all the bullshit of being a downtown Torontonian with your, I got to be fancy this, and I got to show that I'm getting this promotion. It was like, we are in Hoth.
And I thought I thought it smelled bad on the outside.
Nice.
Thank you.
And I realized one of the reasons that you have so many creative people that come from Winnipeg is because it's just effing weird there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's see.
City of extremes.
So then you basically, when you were there, and I'll do my third movie reference. I've done Annie Hall and now Empire Strikes Back. You're like Leonardo DiCaprio from The Revenant. That was you when you were in Winnipeg.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I actually did fight a bear. There was a frozen, half-eaten Subway sandwich on a bus bench, and we both went for it, and I'm happy to say I got the sandwich and a brand-new bearskin coat.
I imagine you were not with Sandra at that time.
Actually, she was, long story.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love Winnipeg, although there's one thing about Winnipeg that drives me crazy. They can't stop talking about the Forks. The Forks is an area of town. They talk about how amazing it is. And it's basically like one block of Parkdale.
Right.
It's fine.
Yeah. It's like in Hamilton's got Hess Village.
Mm-hmm. You know me. I'm a snob for Parkdale, though. I am the Parkdale Panther. All right. So we're 20 minutes in and we've talked no sports. This has got to be a record.
We talked plenty of sports. We did the Leafs and Montreal and Winnipeg and Edmonton. It was all there, Bob.
Yeah, Matt, we did sports adjacent.
True.
Did you watch the Leafs game the other night?
Yeah. Yeah, it was on. It was one of those games where it's the first time ever all year where Matthews ties the game up late, and I didn't really care.
Yeah. I was going to say, you watched the game. I'm not sure they did.
Yeah. I mean, that was human nature.
Totally. You can see, like, if you're really revved up for that game, you got to cut down on how much coffee you're drinking.
Or how much gambling you're doing.
Yeah, better still. Nothing to be learned there. I think that, other than goaltending, which is the obvious question with the Leafs, is there any one question you're most interested to see answered in this first round? Either tactical or big picture.
Just power play. You know, look how bad Toronto was offensively against Columbus last year. And if you're doing bad offensively, one way to fix it would be your power play. So I would go with that. That's the only one.
I think for me, it's Nylander.
Mm-hmm.
I think the difference between Toronto as a sublime offense and Toronto as a good offense might be Nylander. Everybody else we expect to do their jobs now. I expect Tavares to be an incredibly professional second-line center at this point, who's quite trustworthy across the whole ice. And I expect the first line to be brilliant. But just in terms of turning it into like that super juggernaut, if you get good Nylander, God, they can really do exciting things. And I feel like he needs to take over a playoff series now just to shut everybody up. Like, don't just give us a good game and then fade out for two games. For seven games, he needs to go out and dummy another team.
If he could do that, the Leafs could beat anyone.
Yes.
They could beat Colorado. They could beat Vegas. They could beat anyone if you get that. But be careful, Bob. By you even inferring any sort of negative connotation of William Nylander, 98% of Twitter is now very angry at you and thinks you need to shack up with Steve Simmons.
Well, if they win, everybody will forgive everybody. So how about that?
That is true.
And I'm also curious to see, obviously the goaltending, as I mentioned, but I'm curious to see how this lineup shakes out, because I'm still not convinced like what their optimum lineup is now that Riley Nash is an option. And I know this is like classic Toronto micromanagement where you're like so worried about who's on the fourth line, but I'm actually really curious, in the same way that I was curious to see Nick Nurse do some of his strategery. Like how Sheldon Keefe builds his lineup. I don't know if it's going to necessarily make a huge difference, but, you know, you get a lot of, like, I'm not a huge Mikheyev fan, but other people will tell you, oh, he's got to be in there, you know? Or Galchenyuk, what do you do with him? I'd like to see him in there, but does that mean you're not giving Riley Nash a chance? Like, I think there's going to be some, and, you know, Brooks is an interesting wild card in all of this. Like, it'll be really interesting to see who's in those bottom six every night.
As long as it's not Aaron Baines coming in, you know, with the score tied at 20, then we should be fine. You mentioned Nick Nurse. It is true. Well, God, okay. Now I'm just going to come out and say it. Toronto's going to win. They're going to win easily against Montreal. So the most important thing for Nick Nurse is to treat these seven, or it won't even go seven, this highly competitive first round by figuring out what is the best bottom two lines. And someone's feelings are going to get hurt, whether it's Pierre Engvall, who I feel Sheldon Keefe has been more publicly critical of than I think any other member of the Maple Leafs. Adam Brooks had his run. Like, everyone's had their run. You know, Galchenyuk's looked good and bad, but now Galchenyuk won't be on the second line. Someone is not going to be playing that is going to have their feelings hurt.
Craig Button made the point that you can't have Joe Thornton and Wayne Simmonds out there at the same time. And that Simmonds seems to be the guy who's going to go. But for a lot of people, this is exactly what you got Simmonds for, was for these kinds of matchups to make sure that there was a, you know, I use this phrase a lot, but someone who's like a professional grown-up on the ice, somebody that you just know is not going to be fazed by the moment. He doesn't have much to offer, but what he has to offer, he'll give you. But with Jumbo Joe, Jumbo Joe's had a bit of a resurgence, so maybe Craig was being a little too harsh on Joe, but Wayne Simmonds is a really interesting one for me. Like, how much does he wind up playing over the course of, if they do make four rounds, even if they make like two or three rounds, how much impact does he actually have?
There's going to be at least one player on this team that hasn't done much, that if the Leafs go on a deep run, they will get some hero status. It's just the nature of hockey playoffs. And by the way, Bob, I want you to be very, very careful, because right now you are skating on thin ice, my brother. It's like you're back in Winnipeg. Be careful even hinting that you might disagree with Craig Button, because Craig Button is a passionate man.
That is true. Well, we're both curly-headed, and that means we have fire underneath our brow.
I remember, Bob, I remember one time during the Macko and Cause days when you were disagreeing with Craig. And Craig went full Craig Button. And I remember I offered you no help, and I actually hid under the table. I'm like, nope, Bob's got this. I'm going to sit this one out.
I can even tell you what the fight was.
What was it?
I said that I didn't want the Leafs to draft Nick Ritchie. They had the eighth pick that year, and I said, just not Nick Ritchie. And, you know, he's like TSN scout, so who the hell am I to tell him? You know, in the end, I was right. I wanted Nick Ehlers, but really I wanted Nick Ehlers not because I'm a scout. I wanted Nick Ehlers because he was small and skilled, and he seemed like the kind of player that we usually don't draft. Whereas Nick Ritchie was big and thunderous and was exactly the kind of player we usually did draft, and I just didn't want Tyler Biggs part two. But then Craig went after me, and I kind of stood my ground, if you remember.
Me and the other World War One soldiers were hiding, you know, in the trenches trying not to get bombed. But no, I remember.
You know, I felt like I had history, and certainly recent history, on my side, which was the team did not have a good record of drafting, and they tended to go for big guys who people said, you know, physical impact, skill needs to catch up.
And I remember, Bob, my follow-up question to Craig Button to defend you when I said, so anyway, handsome Craig Button, someone as smart as you, what do you think is going to happen? Please tell us, oh wise one.
So, Craig, how disappointed in Bob are you? Craig's a heck of a good guy. He's a very decent man. He's very principled, and I got nothing but fond memories of having him as a teammate. You know, I can't say that about everybody at TSN. There were people I didn't like. I was neutral about plenty, but some really stood out as super quality dudes, and Craig was certainly one of them.
Yep, 100%.
By the way, you said I was on thin ice because of the Winnipeg thing. Trust me, after about November the 15th, there is no thin ice.
That's true. That is
in Winnipeg.
Yeah, that there is no. Okay, let's do the fourth reference. There's no dead zone. You know,
Do you want to do it together on 3, 2, 1?
Sure.
3, 2, 1.
The ice is going to break. All right.
That's a brilliant. We didn't really time it up good, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, we shouldn't have tried. We're on Skype. I mean, when we get back together, when the premiere lets us get back together, we'll be able to time that better than that.
I think it's going to be a tougher matchup against the Habs than you do, as evidenced by the fact that 5 of the games that they played were decided by 1 goal. And I think there's a version of this, obviously, where the Leafs just walk in with their super talent and kick everyone's ass in. But it just feels like the playoffs don't usually work that way. And Montreal's got some good players, and I don't know. I just feel like I don't worry about them losing this round. They shouldn't, but I don't think it'll be a cakewalk. I'm sticking with my prediction, Leafs in 6.
All right, I'm going to go Leafs in 5. But you know what it is, Bob, more than anything else? I think I'm tired of being afraid. And even though the Leafs have done nothing, their postseason record does not scream, I should be confident. I just want to go in with real supreme confidence. I want to know what that feels like. You know, like when the Raptors took on Orlando or Brooklyn last year. And we knew. I want that feeling of going in and going, no, we got this. So I want to go there.
Do you know what all Leafs fans need to do? Do you remember back in the 80s, there was this mythology around the Japanese executive that would take Primal Scream training so that they could unleash the inner beast? And yes. You'd have images of like Japanese businessmen screaming their lungs out. I feel like Leafs fans need Primal Scream therapy just when we think about past playoff performances. Just scream it all out. And then at the end of it, call up Doug Ford, get a pop, and watch the game.
Yeah, I love it. No, 100%. Yes, let's get our primal scream on, everybody. Listen, this Leafs team kicked ass. It was like a 115-win team. Matthews was on a 66 or whatever goal pace. Their regular season should elicit a high level of confidence.
Matt, I think too much. You know this. You know this about me. I think listeners of the pod know this about me. And people who think too much will be the first to tell you the most important thing you can do is think a lot. Funny how that works. And I think you might be onto something here that really do enjoy this. I got to get that inner swagger. You know, I was so terrified during that Raptors playoff run. And by the way, I've got an interesting question for you to come up a little bit later, which comes back to this because it was just the anniversary of the shot.
Yep.
I believe yesterday. I could not enjoy it because I didn't believe in myself. And by that, I mean the team and therefore myself. And maybe you're right. Maybe the way to walk into this time is to say, you know what? I am good enough. I've done the work. I'm a decent person. I deserve to beat Montreal.
Yes.
This is exciting.
Yeah, go full. Was it Stuart Smalley?
Stuart Smalley.
Yeah, I'm good enough. I score enough. And God damn it, the Leafs in 5.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to change my mind.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to change my mind. I'm going to change my attitude.
Ooh, that's deep.
Yeah. Is it? I don't know what it means. Explain it to me.
I can't. But you know what I can explain? I can explain that every now and then you may need legal advice. And if you do, then you should go to Jeff Pollock. He is our sponsor. He's our lawyer. JeffPollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. JeffPollock.com is the website. 416-777-0088. 416-777-0088. He took care of our wills. So to my brother Josh and Scott and my girlfriend Amy, they basically get everything, except my twin brother Josh doesn't get any of my wine.
Well, he doesn't drink.
Yeah, exactly. So the wine will be split up between Scott and Amy.
All right, then. Okay, so most interesting non-Leaf playoff matchup in the first round for you?
Florida and Tampa. These
got to be the winner, right? Got to be the winner.
Yeah. Yeah, they hate each other. They've been fighting a bunch. We can't be angry at Tampa going full cheat mode by keeping Kucherov out for the year as a full salary cap dodge. But they're the Stanley Cup champs. Florida's the young upstart. So yeah, it's got to be that those two.
That could be a heavyweight fight. I don't see any version of it where Florida wins easy. I see a version of it where Tampa does. Usually that's connected to goaltending, but there's a version of this that goes seven and becomes one of these classic playoff first round matches. And man, do I hope that happens. As we all do, of course, just for the entertainment, but also in a perfect world, kind of like, you know, the Raptors caught a couple breaks here and there. In a perfect world, Tampa loses in that first round and we never have to face them.
Hell yeah. And there's only one drawback, Bob, if Florida wins.
What's that?
Is that you're going to get the super hockey elitists going full condescending when people start raving about Barkov and they're like, oh, you've now discovered Alexander Barkov? Hey, thanks for joining the party.
So the entry level smart guy is to say, I don't think they can do it without Aaron Ekblad. And the super smart guy says, Alexander Barkov is the most underappreciated superstar in the game today. That one?
Oh, yeah. 100% that one.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. But you know what? If it means we don't have to face Tampa, yeah. I'll live with it. You know, I'll listen to every guy whose like beard is now super long and gray and looks like Elliot Friedman. By the way, he's really got some stuff going on, eh?
Jesus. Someone's got to take him and shave.
Sorry to interrupt you. Okay, if you could do a makeover right now on Friedman or Mark Masters, who would you clean up first?
Oh, God, that is a Sophie's choice. Every time Masters comes on, I spend half of it yelling at him. Like, does Mark realize that you don't need to go to a barber to fix those sideburns? God.
I keep waiting for Mark Masters to start saying, all right, 23 is going to do you chicken inspectors out there. Here's the last leaves. Ho, ho.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, see? Oh, look at Marner. He's flashing up and down. He's like a little jitterbug on the ice, see?
Oh, that goal was a can of corn.
I'm going to go Masters. Mostly because of those stupid sideburns of his. You could fix those in 2 minutes at home.
Okay. All of us, absolutely myself included, don't look our best right now because it's COVID. We've all given up and we're basically just struggling to stay afloat. We're treading water in terms of our personal aesthetics. I haven't looked this bad in a really long time. Masters is doing this on purpose.
Yeah.
Now I do respect the fact he's trying to own it, but it could all stop. He could let this national nightmare stop tomorrow if he just decided to shave his sideburns.
Agreed. I've actually started a GoFundMe page for Mark's wife, you know, to get some fancy clippers, something. Just clean that bleep up.
You know, if you were to say to me, who is the person on TSN during the lockout, or the lockout, hockey thinking there, during quarantine, that would look the worst? Mm-hmm. Jay Onwright would have won that pool a million times over. How is Jay Onwright not the guy who looks the silliest on TSN, but Mark Masters is?
It's true. And I question the heads at TSN, the head producers. How did they let this happen with Masters? I mean, clearly Jay could have, but he reined it in. But like I saw Masters was doing my show and then afterwards had to do a hit. And he told me he was playing with all the hairspray he could because he had to go outside of MasterCard Center and it was windy and rainy. And he looked 70s haggard. He looked like Gregory Peck haggard.
I think Masters is the leading candidate on TSN TV right now to actually be an evil super genius villain.
He needs the turtleneck. That's all that's missing.
But he's got everything else. And you're right, with the turtleneck and a pinky ring.
Yeah.
Bust out a really big pinky ring, and Masters is the evil Lex Luthor genius.
The other series, Bob, that if you're Toronto that you're watching is Penguins and Islanders.
Because
once again, it is nothing to do with Crosby. It has nothing to do with Matt Barzal. It has everything to do with Lou Lamoriello versus Kyle Dubas. You know, if the Islanders win this, you know, Steve Simmons is going to be doing his little, taking his little going full troll and reminding everyone what Lamoriello's playoff record is since he left the Leafs.
Well, let's also not forget that Brian Burke is part of the Pens now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I completely forgot about that.
He's behind the scenes. He's up in the front office, but so there's a lot of former Leafs exes in that matchup. You know, I'm watching Boston because Boston has me nervous. Remember we talked the other day about attentional bias and how if your brain perceives danger, obviously Tampa Bay, but creeping up slowly behind them is Boston. I've been watching a lot of Boston over since they got Taylor Hall, mostly out of curiosity and then out of fear. They look really good. And they're winning a lot of games going into the playoffs.
They are. And Hall, 11 points in 16 games on the
line. Is that what it is? Krejci.
Yeah, 11 points in 16 games on that second line with Krejci. So it takes a little bit of the pressure off of the Marchand, Bergeron, Pasternak line. And once again, all roads lead back to the Maple Leafs. If Taylor Hall is great, then people will be like, why did the Leafs not try to get Hall instead of Foligno, even though different players and looking for different things? And, oh, Hall was only gone for a second round. Like, just all those complaints will rear their ugly head if Hall goes on a heater.
Did you say second rounder?
Because Foligno, Taylor Hall, Boston got him for, like, I believe it was a second round pick.
And it was a second round pick. And so we got Foligno for more than Boston got Taylor Hall. Now, we've talked about this. The better player is Taylor Hall, but you could make the argument that the better fit for the Leafs was Nick Foligno, just based on what tended to sink them in the past, and that was an inability to win close games or hang on to leads.
Yes.
So I can understand the thinking behind it. I can't disagree with the thinking behind it. However, it will be remembered. If that's the way it happens to go down, that the Leafs flame out and Taylor Hall is transcendent in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. That's just one to keep an eye on. I want to do some wine with you, Matt.
Sure.
You know, we talked, I really enjoyed the other day, and I think a lot of people did when you did wine pairings for Toronto Sports Figures.
Yeah.
I pulled aside three Toronto Raptors, and perhaps you could do a wine, I guess what would be an equivalent?
Yeah.
Okay. Fred Van Vliet, short, punchy, bold, and maybe even too bold.
I'm going to go with a Primitivo, which is Zinfandel, but it's called Primitivo, and that's in southern Italy. And if the temperature can get really hot there, and so sometimes it can be overly bold. And that region where that grape and that wine is from, they don't have any super high-end wines, but they've got a lot of solid stuff. I won't get into a conversation about DOC versus DOCG, but suffice it to say, Van Vliet is solid, but he'll never be elite.
Chris Boucher, a Canadian wine that is surprisingly good, but not necessarily something you would serve with a top-end entree.
Surprisingly good Ontario wine.
But not with an entree, though. You wouldn't necessarily get a $40 or $50 cut of steak and serve the Chris Boucher. It might be something that you have just hanging around the house. It fits on your shelf, but it's not a star.
Okay, I got it. Henry Appellum, their Cab Merlot. Often Cabernet does not work well in Ontario because it is too cool here, but there, and it depends on the year. I tried one from like 2017, 18, and it's not crazy expensive. It's like $25-$26. And it was really good. And I'm like, this is a wine I enjoy drinking, but even though the grape works with that cut of beef, you still wouldn't serve it with your high end main dish.
Nick Nurse, cerebral and often good with different pairings. Surprising. A surprising wine. Cerebral.
Oh, that's easy, Bob. That we're going Burgundy. Because A, Pinot Noir, the high acidity, it goes with a variety of dishes. You know, you get yourself like Gervais Chambertin. That one you could put up against the highest of meatiest of steaks, but then go like Chambon Moussigny. That's perfect with like duck. So I'm going to go that. And Nick Nurse, one of the best in the league. Nick Nurse is Grand Cru Burgundy, baby.
All right, then. So is this wine like a box in one if it needs to be?
Oh, this wine is whatever you want it to be. This is the wine that you find in your parents' cellar, and all the relatives will fight over it.
All right, then. Pascal Siakam, a high-end wine that you don't like as much as you thought you would.
All right, and God, this is such douchebaggy, but that's Napa Cab. And I'm sorry, I love good Napa Cabernet Sauvignon, but there's a lot of it that's really expensive. And then you drink it and you're like, this is a little bit too much of a fruit bomb for me. I mean, yeah, it gets all the credit, but do I really, am I really enjoying this, this silver oak as much as people rave about it? So Pascal Siakam is a, can be a bad vintage Napa cab.
And finally, Masai Ujiri, a wine that you've loved so much, and if you could never have it again, it would make you so sad.
I'm going to go with the wine that turned me into a wine freak. Give me old vintage Barolo. Give me a Palo Scovino, 25-year-old Barolo. It was brick orange when I tried it. I thought it looked super weird. I was scared of it. I took one sip, and I was like, everyone get out of the room. Me and this bottle need to spend some time together.
Wow. You know, I don't know if any of this is accurate, but I'm fascinated. And usually I hate you when you talk about wine, but
it's true.
This is amazing. You got, and I loved how you put this on Twitter. I haven't gotten around to putting it on Instagram yet. I will, but, you should throw these out on Twitter. Like this is, we're finally making good on the promise of sports wine life.
That is true. That's true. Okay. Do you want to, I'm going to write them down because I'll forget them. Do you want to do a give everyone just like what's going on in the home with CC with school? Like, how's all that going in your house?
You know, it's okay. We get periodic notes from the teachers saying, is your kid even in school anymore? And we assure them, no, she's home. She's home. She's just not putting her camera on or participating in any way. But other than that, things are fine.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Our goal
I like
right
that
now,
line.
What's that?
I like that line. Are you sure she's still in school?
You know, here's the thing, and this is going to eventually be a conversation she and Daddy have together. I did really well at school till I was about her age, and then other things came up, and I didn't do as well. And there was a grade 13 conversation that was floating around the province earlier in the week, and you know, I texted out, I don't want to tell anybody whether there should be a mandatory grade 13 or not. Maybe it should be optional for people who want to go to university, and you don't have to take it if you don't want to go that route. But grade 13 saved my life. I failed in no particular order. Math, English, I should have failed physics. I should have failed math a second time. I was told by the teacher in front of the class my 50 was a gift. chemistry, I could have failed. I didn't do well, but I decided two things happened to me. One, I started dating a girl who was really smart, and so I couldn't be the dumb guy anymore. And two, I decided I wanted to go to university, and so I kind of took it upon myself to try. I didn't have the maturity to do that at 16 years old. It took me one more year to get to that point. And maybe I was a late bloomer, maybe I wasn't. But eventually, I will have to have this conversation because my daughter, being half me, is probably going to be like that. She's probably going to look around and say, you know, I could do school or something more fun. She will pick the fun, as I did. And I can't get mad at her, even though I know I will. But I can't get mad at her because I remember what that thinking involves. And in a way, like the kids, like, here's the thing. There's a lot of kids out there who are really amazing and bright and they try really hard. But I don't want her to grow into just some kid who gets the grades because she did everything they said. I kind of like the idea, if there's going to be some bumps in the road, it's because she doesn't necessarily buy what they're selling because of her critical thinking and needs to find her own path. Because I think, you know, success is defined in one really specific way, and it tends to be like, what's your title? How much money are you making? Blah, blah, blah. And that's a pretty boring way of looking at the world. You can be really successful and totally boring. What a shame that would be to go through life to be successful and boring. So I think I'm going to have to try to remind myself that the goal is to be self-sufficient and interesting. And whatever happens next, happens next.
That's a good philosophy.
It's hard, though, because, and any parent can tell you who's listening, there's a lot of pressure to go the other route because it's the route that most people take. And no matter what your personal philosophy may be, it's still a really great influence on you to say, you know, here's the way you're supposed to do it. Even if that way has been sort of just accepted fairly non-critically because it's the path of least resistance, you know?
Is this sort of a debate between you want your daughter to be a free spirit, but at the same time, there's part of you that wants safety? and conformity, because that can lead to safety.
Yeah, I think more so than free spirit, it's a question. The safety thing is really, really interesting. I talked to a friend of mine once, and we both really like the artist Patti Smith. And I just finished reading Patti Smith's memoir about her early 20s when she was living in New York City. It's called Just Kids, and it's an amazing book. I recommend it to anybody. And her early years, they were incredibly bohemian and not easy. You know, she wasn't a drug addict. She wasn't an alcoholic. She wasn't doing terrible things to abuse herself, but she was living, you know, like terrible apartments, you know, eating once every day, maybe, because she was trying to pursue her muse, you know? And we both love Patti Smith, and it had a great ending, this story. She wound up really, really a great artist. And I said to my friend, you love Patti Smith. Would you want your daughter to go that path? And he said, no, it sounds too hard. And I had to ask myself, would I want my daughter to do that path? Like, if that was her journey and it required that much privation. And I thought, you know what? I wouldn't like it, but I would have to go with it. You know, it would be painful to watch, but I couldn't stop it. And that's the thing, like the sort of, that's why I think these kids, they're not encouraged to find their own path. They're encouraged to get good at somebody else's.
That's tough. That's really tough, because, you know, it's also just about control. Like, because you love your daughter so much, there must be part of you that wants control. Like, let me control this. Let me help you. Trust me, I know the best path for you. But then you got to step away and go, okay, go make your mistakes. And I have faith that eventually everything will work out.
We call my daughter First Draft, because whatever she writes, she's good with it.
I thought it's because she was an Austin Matthews fan.
Yeah, maybe. First overall. Well, we'll see about that. Anyway, so that's my update. She's doing good. You know, my wife's really very a very wise person, and it's a good counterbalance, you know, in the home. Her ability to see the whole field is pretty amazing. So, yeah, we're good. You know, it's tough on us the way it's tough on everybody, but we're also so incredibly blessed. You realize that what makes it hard is hard for everyone, and it could be worse.
Very true.
How about you guys?
I'm all good here. You know, I'm again blessed up at the cottage. My twin brother Josh, who's good at building things, he built a zip line, and yeah, like, it's not a giant one; it's a small little zip line for his two kids, Graydon and Elliot. And during the podcast earlier, during their recess, they went on the zip line. And the funniest part is the dog, you know, the dog that chases and it worries about you. So it started nipping at your ankles. It's hilarious.
That's adorable. By the way, my daughter loves zip lines. Now, I know you cannot invite Sandra and I.
Yes.
But can you not invite Cece?
Oh, Charlotte, she can come up. She'd be like, Charlotte would be easy because she can entertain herself. You know, that's the key. If I'm having someone up here, I'm like, listen, kid, you got to be able to entertain yourself for a little while. So she'd be just fine up here.
You know what? She would love it. And with us not there, like the two of you, oh my God. That's a funny pairing.
Yeah.
Uncle also, Max.
Oh yeah. Also, I would have no fear. I would show her how to work the CDU in about 15 minutes. And I'd be like, just go at it, kid.
It's sad to think that she'd be better at it now than I am.
Very sad, Bob.
Very sad.
Very sad.
Before we go, I watched the Jays yesterday in the middle of the day, even though Ryu wasn't pitching. And it was a hell of a good game. Actually, I'm not sure it was a great baseball game, but it was an exciting outcome for the Leaf, or for the Jays. And quietly now, they're four games above 500.
Yeah.
Are we ready to open up our hearts to this team?
Oh, absolutely we are. The only thing we need is for just George Springer to come back, because it's shrouded in mystery and confusion, and it puts a little pit in our stomach. But we were covering the team in 15 and 16. There is, like, listen, everyone can have their favorite sport, and baseball might not be your favorite. And I get it can be boring or this or that, but there's nothing quite like having a good baseball team, because you get it every single day. It's one of the coolest things to have.
I'm glad you brought up Springer, because they were talking about him on the broadcast and how great the lineup will be when they can stretch it out by even one more quality bat. And I started to think, I don't know why, but I had the weirdest thing pop in my head. It reminded me of Markelle Fultz in that first season. You know, when he got injured and no one could figure out what the hell was going on?
Yep.
I feel like we're almost on the doorstep of the, so what's the effing deal here? Like, is this guy going to play or what?
Oh, I feel that. And it's stupid because, yeah, I do. And it's like, listen, he's got a long-term deal and it's about the long-term and all that. But yeah, you get a little bit of that frustrated and a little bit of just the, yeah, what the hell's going on here? Yeah, I feel it with some of the fan base. I feel it within myself as well. Like, it's just this frustration. You're like, why aren't you out there?
There are some situations where you can be logical about it and just put it aside. And then there's other ones where you have this nagging feeling it's not going to turn out in your favor. Like, remember when Greg Oden kept going down and you'd go, I know that he could come back and be fine, but why do I feel like he won't? And then he wasn't fine. I know I'm bringing up basketball examples, but I'm just speaking of times where I've tried to watch the progress of a player and something comes up and it's more of just a gut feeling, as my mother-in-law would say, a pensiere, just the thought that I have in my head that's nagging me. And I got it here. So that's the one thing that's keeping me from really diving in is I'm kind of waiting for Springer and I don't want the anxiety of waiting.
And that's where we're at. And okay, baseball example, Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor, you know, these great careers. And suddenly, wait, why is he out again? Oh, he's surgery. Oh, who is he talking to? Oh, he's going for a second opinion. And then next thing you know, they were out of the league. And I'm not saying that's where Springer's headed, but that's where the insecurity comes from.
Well, we had this as Jays fans with Aaron Sanchez recently.
Yes, perfect example.
Where you kept trying to tell yourself everything's fine and this is logical and they're just being careful. But then you get past the point, you're like, is this guy going to contribute? And, you know, Aaron Sanchez is hurt again with whoever he's playing for now. Like, it's sad. Baseball's just such a weird sport. You know, guys show you a flash and then they're gone. Longevity in baseball is something of a miracle, really. Maybe more so than any other sport, the idea that you can just do it season after season. It's an incredible accomplishment. But that said, though, it was a damn fun game. I was preparing to hate Craig Biggio, Kevin Biggio this season. But yep. I was prepared for it. But he looks great. At least he did yesterday. So maybe he's going to turn it around.
And then Teoscar Hernandez has been great since coming back from COVID. Vlad,
I was prepared to hate him too.
Yeah, but no, this is an impressive start of the year considering all the injuries.
I still feel like Lourdes Gurriel. He's making good on my "I was prepared to hate him" thing. But everybody else is really delivering.
You know what this is, and I'll end it on this thought, and we'll circle back to golf and Bushwood and all that. With guys like Gurriel's productivity or George Springer's health, I'm like Judge Smales, where I'm like, well, we're waiting.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.